Tonight's shiur is entitled The Deleted File of the Chassam Sofer, an eye-opening lesson about the national identity of the Jewish people and the land of Israel. So, if you notice the source sheets, if you turn to page 1, you'll see that we're actually very heavy text-based tonight, and I apologize for that. I usually like to be a little bit more discussion-oriented or glean from a few sources. But the topic that we're going to discuss is very nuanced. I guess the best way to say it is that my whole life I've grown up thinking that I knew this concept, and I didn't. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. The concept is Klal Yisrael as Ish Echad B'Lev Echad, as one person, you know, with one heart. You know, or however you want to package it, Ve'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, you know, or Kol Yisrael Arevin Zel Hazeh, the notion of, you know, the Jewish people as an entity that is one, you know, so much so that the Talmud Yerushalmi even says, you know, when a Jew fights with another Jew, it's as if one hand is slapping the other. So this is the way that I've always related to this in terms of, yeah, of course, we'd be there for any Jew, even on a halachic level, you know, if another Jew has not yet said Kiddush, you know, so I could say it for him because my obligation has not been fulfilled. And, you know, like, it's the topic of every rabbi's speech, let's say, at least once a year, probably 5 or 6 or 7 times a year, you know, especially when you get to Parashat Kedoshim, you know, everyone's talking about the notion of Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, and specifically within the context of Klal Yisrael. But let's try for a second to take our chalkboard and use our eraser and wipe it all off. I want to try to rebuild the concept from scratch, from a way that maybe we haven't seen it before. And I actually learned this year in the Kollel on Yom Ha'atzmaut. The Kollel was sitting around having a discussion, and one of the Israelis, Rabbi Berman, who lives across the street, so he brought a Rashar Hirsch, a piece from Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, which is also in the sources, that kind of started to open my eyes. So let's start with the source itself, the Chassam Sofer that's theoretically deleted, and yet I have yet to confirm that it's deleted, because everywhere I've looked, whether it's in the Bar Ilan or the Otzer HaChachma, I've seen it there. But here we go. So the Chassam Sofer is found in Masechet Sukkah, and is actually discussing a Gemara in Brachot. And the Gemara in Brachot is famous. There's a machloket between Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai with regards to the classic question of Parnasa, the obligation of an individual to go out and support his family, in contrast to the notion of learning Torah all day. And it's a very interesting discussion. You see, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, you know, says, I don't understand. If you're going to try and collect grain, so to speak, he quotes the pasuk Ve'asafta deganecha, you know, and you're going to have to winnow, and you're going to have to cut, and you're going to, you're going to have to water your plants, and so on and so forth. And the phrase is Torah matehealeh. What's going to happen to the Torah? And if we put too much of an emphasis on our parnasa, then what? When's time for our Torah to be built? Rabbi Shmuel, on the other hand, brings the pasuk Ve'asafta deganecha, that with an obligation, so to speak, to collect grain. It's a pasuk, and the nature of what he's saying with that pasuk is somewhat ambiguous. Ve'asafta deganecha, is that an indication? Well, it's a necessity. I need to do it, or is Ve'asafta deganecha? No, it's an obligation to do. So it's somewhat ambiguous, and the Gemara doesn't come to a conclusion. And you know, this is one of those champion the elu va elu divrei Elokim chaim Gemaras that I value very much, because I personally feel that there are many ways. Not me personally. The Gemara is all over the Masechet Kittin, all over Chazal. There are so many ways of the Torah, so many pathways that are all MS. And so the Torah says like this. The Gemara says like this. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who said that you should learn all day, and you know the money will be brought to you, so to speak. So the Gemara says, well, many people have attempted this and weren't matzliach. They were not successful in this path. And many people attempted Rabbi Yishmael's path, which wasn't to cut out Torah, but to also have within context of his life a way to sustain himself. Many people have tried this path and have been successful. The Gemara doesn't conclude one is right, one is wrong. They've just concluded that it almost implies like, yes, they are both ways to serve Hashem, but one of them is an easier path. You know, to live the way of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, you know, we can picture the cave, so to speak, where he literally subsisted on a miracle. Right? And that does exist within our Ashkaf. It is definitely a concept. But Rabbi Ishmael's way to not just live on bitachon, but have a heavier level of ishtadlus, is something that is more easily accessible to the rabbi, to the public. Within this context, so we mentioned that the pasuk v'asafta deganecha, that you shall gather your grain, is ambiguous. So what does it mean to gather your grain? Is it an obligation? So look at what the Chassam Sofer says. If you look at the bolded letters, I left the entire piece so that you can go over it at some point if you'd like in a fuller way. But if you look at the bolded words, he says as follows: Nira la'aniut da'ati. It would seem to my simple mind. Of course, the Chassam Sofer referring to himself as a simple-minded individual. He says, Rabbi Shmuel and Nami lo amar mikra ve'asafta diganecha. When he cited the verse of Yasafta diganecha, he didn't say it Ella except with two conditions: the Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, v'rov Yisrael shruyin, that the majority of the Jewish people are there, sheha'avoda bekarka, because the service of the land itself, gufa mitzvah, is intrinsically a mitzvah. What is the mitzvah? What can we title it as? Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The mitzvah is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, living in the land of Israel. And he continues to bring this out. Ulahotzi peroseha hakdoshim, and to bring out its holy fruit. This is part of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Ve'alzet sivta ha-Torah, and on this the Torah commanded, right? So we're wondering, is ve'asafta deganecha commandment or just a necessity? The Chassam Sofer is viewing it as an obligation, a duty. He says the asafta deganecha is the mitzvah of the Torah, and he gives an example. Boaz, for example, Boaz Sefer Rut, Zore Goren Haseorim Halaila Mishu Mitzvah. He winnowed his Goren, his threshing ground of barley at night because it was a mitzvah. Uki'ilu tomar, and it would be as if to say, this is Rabbi Shmuel's argument, lo aniach tefillin, I'm not going to put on tefillin, mipnei she'ani osek b'Torah. I'm not going to put on tefillin because I'm learning Torah right now. And we all know that, late man de palik, there's no one who disagrees to the notion that, no, you have an obligation to put on your tefillin, regardless of your the argument about, well, I'm learning Torah right now. So he says as follows, Hachanami, so to hear, lo yomar lo esof digani. Rabbi Shmuel's argument is, I can't say, don't gather your grain. You think esak haTorah because of learning the Torah. And he says one more step, which I think is very fascinating. The efshar, it's possible to say, afilu sha'are umaniyut, any other form of craftsmanship, sheyesh b'hem yishuv ha'olam, which is involved in dwelling in the world, sitting in this world, hakol bichlal mitzvah, all of it is under the category of mitzvah, every single section of yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So that would imply, if you're an artist up in Tzfat, you know, if you're a doctor, or working in Microsoft in Israel, whatever it is that you're doing that's involved with Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, building the economy, is intrinsically a mitzvah. In fact, Rav Kook, there's a very interesting book that Rabbi Brand showed us, where they have a number of postings. If you ever walk through Mea Sharim in Israel, you'll notice there's often postings with messages, Torah messages from leaders. And so Rav Kook had a number of postings that went up in Israel, and one of them was that we should spread the word to buy Israeli products, even in Chutz La'aretz, to buy Osem, you know, for example. And here we have an application, perhaps, of this Chassam Sofer. If the building of dwelling in the land of Israel can be applied to based on building its economy, or working on fulfilling the umaniyut and any form of Yishuv HaOlam being able to dwell in the land, that would be taking part in some way in the midst of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So this is the Chassam Sofer at first. And drawing on this Chassam Sofer, I'd like to bring up a discussion here. Or maybe a piece of question. If the mitzvah is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the Ramban, many, many, many years ago, decided to make the trek up to Israel. Was he fulfilling the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? Was, you know, the Vilna Gaon writes a beautiful letter to his family, the Igeret Agra, which I think is a must read. It's touching, it's powerful, it's inspiring. And he writes a letter to his family when he was on his way to see the land of Israel. And this trek, this path to get there, are you fulfilling the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael just by living there? Did the Ramban fulfill it? Did Rav Ovadia Mibar Tanura, who lived in Jerusalem, did he fulfill it? So, according to Chassam Sofer, one might argue no. Why? Because he says, the Asafta de Ganecha can only be fulfilled in the land of Israel with the condition of Virov Yisrael Shirui, that the majority of Israel dwells there. So here's the problem. I don't understand. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael means to live in the land of Israel. Why would it be that if the majority isn't there, that mitzvah isn't being fulfilled? And it's very interesting, by the way. This, you should know, this isn't the only mitzvah that, or the only source that we ever see in which a Rov Yisrael... Very good. By a Sanhedrin, the mitzvah of Hafrashas Chala on a Torah level, you know, is also one of those examples where in order to get to that point, the Rambam writes that you have to actually have Rov Yisrael. What's the connection? How does the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael connect? So on a peripheral level, we already see it, maybe even more than a peripheral level, we see in the Chassam Sofer that he seems to understand that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is defined within the context of building a people, Yishuva Olam, you know, Umaniyut and so on and so forth. But let's try and ask spiritually, why is this so? What's the nature of this? So if you head over to the Rashar Hirsch, Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch, in Sefer Dvarim, he has a very interesting essay. It's very long. I don't want to spend too much time on the source. I'll highlight some of the points over here. Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch says a lot of people point to Sefer Dvarim as Mishneh Torah, as it's fondly referred to throughout Chazal, as the repetition of the Torah. And he points out, he says, there's, you know, over 100 mitzvahs in the Torah, in Sefer Dvarim. I think it's about 140. And he writes, but I don't understand, Limala Mishivim mina mitzvos ha'ela hin mitzvos chadashos. 70 of these mitzvahs are brand new. So how can one argue that Sefer Dvarim is just a repetition of Torah, everything that came till now, if we have all these new mitzvahs? So Rav Shimon Rav Harsha has a very interesting approach. He says, maybe we can understand this based on the holidays. So if you look at the second paragraph of Rav Shimon Rav Harsha on page 1, Na'ayen be'achat mikvutzot ha-mitzvot. Everyone sees me on the second paragraph? We will analyze for a second a certain group of mitzvahs, ha'ela ha-nir'et ke'in chazara chalakit, which seems like a repetition of sorts. V'ulaynu chalim tzol yedei kach, through this analysis, maybe we can find it ha-mafteach, the key le'pitron ha-she'elot ha'ela, the key to unlocking or understanding and answering my question. So he says as follows. If you look, Perek Tet Zayin, the 16th chapter of Dvarim, Chozer Ta Torah al Mitzvot HaMoadot, the Torah reviews the mitzvahs of the holidays, and writes as follows, Ulam b'chazara zo, hi mazkira rak Pesach Shavuot v'sukot. It only lists the Shalosh Regalim. V'meshaveh parsha zo leparshat HaMoadot, shebesefer Vayikra. If you compare them to Sefer Vayikra, you'll see immediately. We don't have Shabbos written here, or Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Shmini Atzeres. All these other holidays are missing. It's just the Shalosh Regalim are there. He says, "Asaga Shabbat." He says, "What is the underlying, connector here?" Sheba Arba'at Ela Hu Shemashma Utam Nov Ot Mi Etzem Yechasinu Al Hashem. The meaning, the intrinsic meaning of these holidays, have to stem from our relationship with God. the ones that are left out. Yeter al kein, more than just that they teach us about the relationship with God, they seem to highlight the relationship of the individual, not just our relationship, but each individual's relationship. Mishum kach, therefore, efshar, we could say, hayala kayim, we can fulfill them in full, gam b'tkufat ha-midbar, even when we are in the desert. And the intrinsic inheritance of the land didn't add anything with regards to fulfilling those mitzvahs. But there's something different about Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Bechina achat shamash ma'utam, one level, hayachas ala adama, is the relationship to the land, ulhit pat chuta ha'unatit, and it's opening up from a time-bound angle, meaning the angle of the of these holidays and the relationship to agriculture and the land. And he says, further than this, and he says that's titkayem rak acharei kibush haaretz. That can only be fulfilled after the land is conquered. And he says yeter al kein, more than this, b'chag ha-sukkot on Sukkos afilo mashmaut ha-historit shel mitzvat sukkah k'mazker le-sukkot shebamidbar. Even on a historic level, you cannot fulfill the mitzvah of Sukkos in the desert properly. Titkayem rak acharei ha-ma'avar min ha-sukkot shel ha-midbar el ha-sadot ha-harim. How can you remember the sukkahs of the desert until you leave the desert and you're actually in your own city? So he says, kemo kein kashel aniach she'aya efshar lekayem mitzvot lulav ha-midbar. He says, and it's also hard to imagine that they fulfilled the mitzvah of lulav in the midbar. There are certain traditions that suggest that that the Malachim brought lulavim to the Jews in the desert. But on a pshat level, the Rashar Hirsch is suggesting, he says, well, I have a hard time believing they were able to fulfill lulav. You know, there just wasn't what weren't trees there. You know, how did that work? So he already is starting to tell us that the transformation from the first four Sfarim and Mishneh Torah is a transformation from a nation in the desert to a nation that lives in the land of Israel. But then he says another level. Ubisofor shal davar. In the end, b'chol shlosh tam noagot mitzvot aliyah l'regel hamechayevet et ha'uma. Says these three mitzvos these three holidays have the minhag of going aliyah l'regel, going up to Jerusalem, which obligates the nation as a whole lihikahel b'migdash shehu merkaz ha'uma, because it's the center of the nation. If you'll notice, I actually put a picture. It was a beautiful painting of Migdal David over here, and I think it was an attempted reconstruction of what it looked like. And it's beautiful. And for me, Migdal David, David and his kingdom, in a way represents the quintessential like Klal Yisrael as a whole, as a nation. But anyway, so he says that the last point, the central point of this holiday transformation, not just the land of Israel, but it's the land of Israel within the context of a nation, of a klal, of a whole, and the obligation on the whole. And then he continues to add some more. Ve'od, you know, after the three dots, and we won't read all of them, he says, ha'anaga ha'le'umit, the national way that people live. And then he lists, you know, a number of mitzvos, like the Sanhedrin, a melech, shoftim, and so on and so forth. All these things, like a judge, a king, a judicial system. And so these are things that are introduced in Sefer Devarim. I definitely encourage people to look at the rest of his essay. It's beautiful. And he basically opens your eyes to see Sefer Devarim as the Sefer of the Ummah, the Sefer of the nation, the book of us as a whole. So now that we've started to try to reconstruct a little bit the concept of a klal, so most of the conceptual building blocks that I've ever been given of a nation is the individual interaction, or even the national interaction, in the sense of course, any Jew who needs my help, of course, you know, whether it's through Maasei Tzedakah, whether it's through Kiruv Ruchokim, reaching out to people, Shadchanus, helping people find their spouses, and financial help, meaning. If you're in trouble, I'm in trouble too, and that is definitely a level of this understanding. But there seems to be a different type of personality here, if you will. Let me give a mashal, and this I think helps me to understand it more, is if you imagine the body, the body is made up of 60 trillion cells. Each cell, in and of itself, is alive. Each cell has its own life, and it started as a stem cell, right? It chose, so to speak, to create itself as a liver, as a lung, as a nerve, right? The stem cell has its own life. It's taken its own form. And yet, these 60 trillion cells have collected and gathered themselves together, and there's a new consciousness. The neshama collects the entire goof, and I mean, it could be that scientifically, there even the brain is capable of doing this, and the neshama is more than that. It could be its own sheer. But the idea is that the 60 trillion cells have another level of consciousness and are another life. There are 60 trillion individual lives that support each other, and then there's a nation or a body that's its own being, right? Let's say this being's name is Jacob or Israel, right? Right, the Jewish people, Yaakov Avinu, Yisrael, we're B'nai Yisrael. So this bigger collective individual is Yaakov, is Yisrael. And now imagine Yaakov Avinu, imagine Yisrael as a single unit prostrating himself before the Lord in the Kodesh Kadosh. Imagine that for a second. Imagine this being totally and completely submissive to God and having a beautiful relationship with Him. Imagine that. I think that what's happening in this transformation, why is Rov Yisrael, why is the majority of the Jewish people needed for Yisrael to be able to establish a Sanhedrin and to be able to fulfill Yeshuva Aretz, is because Yeshuva Aretz can only be fulfilled by Israel, this guy that we've constructed. I can't fulfill Yeshuva Aretz Yisrael in the sense that the Ummah, the nation as a whole, has an obligation to fulfill that mitzvah. Now, I'm not saying lehalacha. You know, if you read the poskim nowadays, there's many, many poskim who discuss Yeshuva Eretz Yisrael within the context of today, even if you don't have Rov Yisrael there. But within the context of what was being suggested by the Chassam Sofer, you have this klal, you have this hold that are doing it. And Yeshuva Eretz Yisrael has to be fulfilled in that way. Okay. So this is the first Yisrael. This is the foundation of our first step in this year. And by the way, I strongly suggest the digestion of this concept, because I think once it's collected, once it's seen and viewed, it's very eye-opening for a lot of things. You were mentioning, Batya, that a Sanhedrin, right, can only be formed as a rove. So there's always discussion about the interesting phenomenon that a Sanhedrin, right, cannot really exist nowadays, because we've had a cut-off. In some way, the Mesorah, in some way of Smicha, has been cut off since Moshe Rabbeinu. But it's well known that there's a suggested opinion that if the entire Jewish people as a whole elected one individual, they could theoretically recreate him and reconstruct the entire Sanhedrin through that individual. What are we seeing from here? Maybe that this picture is so clear. Why is that so? How is that possible? Is that maybe intrinsic in the mitzvah of the Sanhedrin is that it's a national mitzvah. It's a national obligation of sorts. And therefore, if the klal, as Yisrael, so to speak, elects one part of his being as this is the brain, right, or this is the nefesh, or however you want to phrase it, this is the Sanhedrin, so yes, there we go. Anyway, I strongly suggest a long, thorough digestion of this concept. It's really opened me up tremendously. With that, I'd like to do something that you should never do in a shir. Talk about a second topic, right? But which seems in some ways to be entirely separate, but you'll see when we do the tie-up together that there perhaps is a beautiful shiluv, a beautiful harmony that we can bring between these two concepts. The next concept is the notion of tefillah in its interaction with the land of Israel. If you look in Sefer Dvarim, in the first psukim over here that we quote in Akev, the Torah decides to contrast the land of Israel with the land of Egypt. And it says as follows, Ki aretz asher atav hashamal rishta, this is on page 2, source 1, the land that you're coming to inherit, lo cheretz Mitzrayim, it's not like Egypt, asher yitzatem misham, that you left from asher tizra'atz aracha, in which you can plant seeds, vishkita v'raglacha kegan hayarak, and you can water it with your feet like the gan hayarak, like a vegetable garden. It's not like that. Don't worry, it's not like the land of Egypt in which you have an irrigation system. It's much better. The land you're going to is in Eretz Harim of Ka'ot. Don't worry, it's difficult. It's mountains and valleys. It's a harder place for planting things. And you're going to drink from the rainwater. So if I were you, and I were a farmer, I'd be like, this is not a very helpful situation over here. What am I going to do? I don't have my irrigation system. You want me to build a farm without a hose, and I'm going to have mountains, and I'm going to have valleys. But don't worry, it's good. And the Ramban actually spells this out maybe a little bit more. He tries to address this. He says, V'hinei ha-parsha hazo, you see in the second source here, this parsha, Tazhir b'mina goshal olam, is enlightening us to the regular way in which the world works. When we met on Nilmad, and we can learn from this parsha, ki afalpi, even though it's shusha kol birshuto, everything is in the hands of God. V'nakel be'enei Hashem yitbarach lahavid yoshvei eretz Mitzrayim, God very easily could cause those who live in Israel, in the land of Mitzrayim, to be lost. U'lehovish neharotam be'oreihem, and very easily could dry up their rivers. Aval eretz Canaan, but the land of Canaan tovad yoter mehira, the land of Canaan will be lost very quickly. Shelo yitain ba matarot yuzo. All it needs is that it just doesn't have great rain for the year, and we're dead in the water. This is the minhag olam. This is the regular teva. This is the nature of the world. The Ramban says these psukim are highlighting that we're in trouble, and he says, "Hacholat tzarich zuchut utfila." Someone who's sick, for example, as a metaphor, would need more merit and prayer. Shirapeu Hashem for God to heal him. Yoter mina barish lo ba'alav choli. It would be like a person who's sick, who needs more zchus than someone who's healthy. Who says, oh yeah, like I need to be protected from being sick. There's more merit involved. V'kach hamida be'oni v'asher, and so too with poverty and wealth. U'me'ir enei shneim Hashem. And Hashem lightens the eyes of all. The notion of this sick person, so to speak, or this poor person, so to speak, is the blessing of the land of Israel. Why? Because it invokes a relationship between man and God. If you look at the third pasuk that I left out in Devarim, I didn't read it, I skipped over it. It said, Eretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Doresh Ota. It's the land that Hashem looks out for, he searches for. Tamid Einei Hashem Elokecha, and Hashem's eyes are always there, Mireishit Hashana, Yad Acharit Hashana, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. So what winds up being, from the Minhag HaOlam, from the normal nature, natural ways that the world works, a challenge, winds up being a blessing. Winds up being, this is the land in which you have to call out to Hashem. You ever go to Israel and you just like wonder, like, what's, calm down, calm down everyone. Like, why do I, you hop into a cab and like, no matter what time of day, no matter how much time he has, he's always in a rush. There's a sense of like pressure and need. And don't get me wrong, Israel is the biggest blessing, and this is our family, is our home. But you sense that there's more of a challenge, so to speak. Things are more cramped in some ways. But this is the blessing of the land. The blessing is that we have to call out to the Almighty. And so I'd like to point it out in Pasuk and Bereishit. The Pasukim and Bereishit, if you read in Source 3, I think, tell us something beautiful. In Sefer Bereishit, we have the creation of man. And in the second chapter, verse 5, the Torah tells us, V'chosiach hasadeh ter mi'ava'aretz. The plants of the field were not yet in the land. V'chol esef hasadeh ter mi'tzmach. And all the greenery did not yet sprout. Ki lo imtir Hashem Elokim ala ha'aretz. Hashem didn't bring rain down. Ve'adam ayin la'avod et ha'adamah. There was no man left to work the field. Yet. Ve'ed ya'ale min ha'aretz. And a mist came from the ground, vishkat kol pnei adama, and watered the ground. And then what happened? Vayitzer Hashem Elokim et ha'adam. Then Hashem created man. And then what happens right after man is created? Vayitzer Hashem Elokim gan ve'eden. And then God makes the Garden of Eden, and He puts man. Then vayasim Hashem et ha'adam asher yatzar. He places man in this garden, and then vayitzmach Hashem Elokim min ha'adama kol eitz nechmad l'mareh. Then Hashem makes the trees that are beautiful to see, betovu ma'achal, good to eat, He causes them to come out. Beis ha'chayim betoch ha'ganim, the tree of life, beis ha'dat, the tree of knowledge, and so on and so forth. These five psukim, if you look at them together, so this is a classic discussion in Rashi, even, says that there's a hint, there's a hint over here, that rain is a response to prayer. There was no man yet, and Hashem wanted someone to recognize goodness and call out to God for need. And then what did Hashem do? So Hashem would come, Yishkat kol pnei adama, and He would bring down the rain. So the nature of rain, so to speak, is liquid tefillah, is liquid prayer. It's the response to prayer coming down. Before there was man, before there was the Adam Ayin La Avodat HaAdama, Mefarshim point out, La Avod comes from the word Avodah. There was no man to serve, so Avodah means worship. There was no man to pray, so there was no rain to be had, because rain is something that is a blessing that comes from Shamayim Ta'aretz. That is a response to prayer. The next time you see rain, you could think liquid prayer. Hashem's response, right? This is evoked in the land of Israel. So we have two different ideas. We have the notion of the nation, and we have the second notion of the nature of Israel putting us in the corner, pushing us to the wall, and saying, you're in trouble, call out to Hashem. And then Hashem responds. Sometimes we don't always see it. Sometimes it's not in one day. But in the end of the day, this relationship between us and God continues to exist. And this is the blessing of the land. That Mitzrayim didn't need God. They didn't need to look up, but we do. And we're forced to have a relationship. And is that not the purpose of life? You know, it's very interesting. This is more of a Svarti thing, if you will. The Ben Yehoyada, it's Kabbalistic. The Ben Yehoyada cites that there's a notion that every Hebrew letter can be spelled out. I think I may have actually mentioned this last time, but I love quoting it. Every letter can be spelled out in Hebrew, and each spelled out letter has its own meaning. So, for example, the letter Ayin, right, can be spelled out Ayin Yod Nun, which is the I. It has its own Torah. You know, the gematria of the letter Ayin is 70, which is the numerical value of secret, of sod, of yain, of wine. And the number 70, the I, is teaching us about vision, seeing things past their beginnings. That's the secrets, that's the wine. So just as an example. So says the Ben Yehoyada, the name Adam, the name man, can be spelled out Aleph, Dalet, Mem. The hidden letters of Adam are Lamed Pe, Lamed Mem, Lamed Taf and Mem. Sorry, Lamed Pe, Lamed Taf and Mem. The hidden letters, right? Adam is spelled out. You cut out the Aleph, the Dalet, and the Mem. The hidden letters, the secret meaning of man, are the letters that make up the word Mitpalel, to pray. The essence of man is to be someone who calls out and fuses the two worlds. Who says, Hashem, I can't be here alone. You can put me in my luxurious house with a bajillion dollars, but I want a relationship with you. I want you in my life. So these are the two ideas of the land of Israel. So I'd like to suggest one last idea to close. This is my own personal thing, and take it if you like it. If not, it's fine. But as I said, digesting this concept, if you look at the history of the land of Israel, agriculturally, there's an astounding phenomenon that the land of Israel is described throughout Tanakh in luscious ways, in ways in which it was a beautiful fruit-yielding place. And yet, throughout history, we have so many indications that that wasn't so. When the Jewish people left Israel, there was nothing. So I'd like to suggest the following. The Adam Ayin La'avodat Adama. The way the Chassam Sofer defined the Jewish people in the land of Israel is that it has to be the home of the Klal, the home of the people, the Rov Yisrael. Right? When Yisrael started to return, there was the beginning of an Adam. There was again an Adam, and then Hashem could have created that Gan, the land of Israel, right? The quintessential place of the world, with the quintessential being, this Yisrael, this bigger being, as it started its return to Israel. So then once again, we had our land sprouting again. And we call out to God and need Him again, and the response comes in the land. So once there is a person who can recognize Hashem's Tova and call out to God, as Rashi describes, then our land, right, can be that way as well. The being, the Yisrael that we are as a whole, now can call out Hashem. Finally, just for a little bit of inspiration to take home, on the last page, I'm surprised, this is one of my favorite sources in all of Chazal. It's cited in the Mishnah Berurah, and it's fascinating because it's based on Kabbalah, but the Mishnah Berurah cites it. So this is something that is already dispersed and amongst our teachings and appropriate to bring in. Says the Mishnah Berurah as follows. There's a halacha that we're supposed to raise our eyes to the sky during Kedusha. We're supposed to look up. And by the way, there's a debate as to exactly how this works. Eyes opened, eyes closed. Ask your local Orthodox rabbi exactly how to do it. But there's a machlokas in the Mishnah Berurah about whether your eyes should be open or closed. And he says, V'yesh lisa, why do we lift our eyes? So he says as follows, Ki katvu b'shem sefer hechalot. It was written in the name of the book, hechalot, the following. Bruchim atem l'Hashem, blessed are you to God, Shamayim, v'yordei merkava, the heavens and those who come down on the merkava, on the chariot of God. I don't even know what that means. I don't even pretend to know what that means. But blessed are you angels or beings, im tomru, if you will tell the tagidu lebanai, and tell my children, ma she'ani oseh, what I do, b'sha'ash makdishim, when Kla Yisrael says Kedusha, ve'omrim kadosh kadosh kadosh, and they say the Kedusha. And what was it that we learned? What is it that he does? V'lamdu otam she'yihiyu einam nesuot lamara, we were taught to lift our eyes to the sky, levei tefilatam, to the house of their prayer, so to speak. V'nos imetz ma'am lamal, and we lift ourselves up. Right, we go on our tiptoes. Ki ein li hana ba'olam, says Hashem, there is no greater pleasure in the world ke utasha'a, like that moment. Sheinam nisuot be'einai, where their eyes are lifted to my eyes, be'einai be'einayhem, and my eyes back in theirs. Be'utasha'a, at that moment, ani ochez b'kisei kvodi, I grab onto my throne of glory, bidmut Yaakov, onto the face of Jacob, onto the face of Yaakov Avinu, umechabka, I hug it, umenashka, and I kiss it, umazkir zchutam, and I remember the zchus of the Jewish people, umemaher geulasam, and bring the geula closer. Wow! What a Mishnah Berurah! What a powerful thing! The most pleasureful moments for Hashem in the entire world, and when we look up to Hashem and declare His holiness, and that the entire world is filled with it. Why is this relevant to our discussion? So we, l'tzareinu harav, to our great pain, are not yet in the land. But there's another place in which there's a shaychut, perhaps, a connection to this klal. Right? The Chazal all over the place refer to the power of davening b'tzibur as a nation, as a minion, and there's no comparison between davening as a whole or davening as an individual, maybe even a tapping into that greater piece, that bigger, larger being known as Yaakov. And in that experience, when we become part of that Yisrael, so what does Hashem do? He looks back in our eyes, that relationship of love, that belovedness that He has for His people comes out. Hashem kisses the demut of Yaakov. With everything that we've said until now, maybe we have a little bit of a picture. What is the idea of Yaakov? A friend of mine spoke personally to Rav Moshe Shapiro, a great Baal Hashkafa in Israel, a Talmid of Rav Dessler, who explained the following. He said, the word minashkat, kiss, comes from another Hebrew word, hashaka. Hashaka is the way in which a mikvah, you go to the Keli mikvah in Tui, you imagine if you have all of the Jews of Chicago dunking all their vessels, mikvah water is going to get very dirty. So how do we deal with it? We have one basin of rainwater and one of clean water, right? The one that you see. And we connect them with a pipe. That connection is called hashaka, and that transforms the other half into a mikvah, into a kosher halachic mikvah. So Rav Moshe Shapiro said to my friend, that minashka, to kiss, that Hashem does to Yaakov Avinu, to the Jewish people as a whole at that moment, is a connection, is a unity that He binds Himself with us. that we are more like Him, that we are one with our Father in heaven. And so maybe this is one of the take-homes we could take, that building our klal in every way that we can connect, the notion of building a nation, building Eretz Yisrael as a whole, you know, the Yishuva Aris of the Chassam Sofer, or joining our tzibors in Chuslaris, all of these are ways in which we understand from a much bigger perspective what does it mean to be part of a klal, to be part of the 60 trillion cells that are actually one being of a greater consciousness. And may we all be zochah to be part of this klal. Thank you very much for coming.